Happy Tuesday, Depression Tuesday, on the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan is here. And we are presented, as always, by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Ira, check out this Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon offer. You ready? You ready for this?
I'm all ears, baby.
All right, Ira. It's clearance time at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Save up to 13 grand on remaining 2017 Cadillacs. 13 grand, Ira. And for a limited time only, get 0% for 72 months on the powerful Cadillac Escalade. Plus, you get free car washes for life. Dante has a problem outside the car. It's all taken care of, Ira. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. See the dealer for all the details. Offer ends the end of the month, Ira. You know how these offers, they fade away.
You mean if I spill a little Riesling on the front seat, it's all taken care of?
This is an exterior cleaning, Ira.
I understand.
Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. They do a lot, as do all the Ed Morse dealerships, during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. They're holding their Drive for Hope event and supporting women in their brave fight by donating a portion of each sale to My Hope Chest. You can get more information at myhopechest.org. They do wonderful work in the community. So when you lease a 2017 ATS sedan for $329 a month, sign and drive, you're supporting a great cause. Visit Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa or go to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Also, that offer ends at the end of the month with the Breast Cancer Awareness Month here in October.
That's good news, Steve, and God knows Buck fans need some good news, Steve. You know, Lee, it took me till the middle of last week to get over the Arizona debacle. And I don't think this week's going to be any easier. This one might push into Thursday before the den of depression is lifted. Because as I wrote in my column following the game, in a lot of ways, this one was harder to take. You could say they didn't show up in Arizona, which they didn't. You can't say they didn't show up in Orchard Park because they battled back. The game didn't get out of hand in the first half. 17-6 is not, you know, 31-0. They were able to run the ball, or at least try, a lot more than they did against Arizona. The score was fairly close, and Martin got his 20 carries. Now, was he effective? Absolutely not. He was not. He looked a lot like Doug Martin of 2016, and we don't want to go there. But, Lee, in a
who
lot
could have guessed that?
You know, Lee, when you roll off a 21-3 spurt and take command, apparently, of this football game, the crowd's dead. You know, you took them out of it. You're facing Tyrod Taylor, who doesn't scare anybody except Buffalo supporters, for the most part. And then, you know, I went to take a leak or whatever. I come back, they're on the 15-yard line. I ask Isbitz what happened. He goes, they had a wheel route that nobody covered and a personal foul, and then now they're on the 15-yard line. Lee, in a lot of ways, this was a more bitter pill than the Arizona game.
Three plays, 75 yards, Tyrod Taylor. It's all you need to know how bad this defense is. Three plays. That's why I don't have an issue with T.J. Ward mouthing off after the game. He sees that tripe, and he's like, you mean I can do worse? What the hell am I not solid for playing with the towel boy here? I mean, that's all he needed to say. Three plays, 75 yards, Tyrod Taylor.
And, Steve, while I don't disagree with the message of what T.J. Ward was saying, I strongly disagree with the form it took, which is in front of cameras, outside the walls of Buck Place. Guys, I'm going to tell you this. I've been watching sports for a long time and been, you know, a professional, being paid in sports for a long time, as Isbitz never fails to point out.
Sage wisdom.
1976, a long time ago, guys. Jimmy Carter was in the White House.
Rookie year.
Now,
he went in 77, but that's okay.
Yes, but election. Election. You know,
I got you. I'm teasing you, Ira. I'm teasing you.
T.J. Ward has every right to walk or storm into Dirk Cutter's office on Monday morning and lay his case out. And nobody would have a problem with that. Cutter's supposed to have his door open, which he should, and hear the concerns of his players, and Ward's supposed to be one of his better players.
And Mike Smith comes across the guy that's open door policy.
Yeah, and let him talk to Smith and Cutter together. That's good. Don't lay your dirty laundry out, Lee. Don't do it. And then Baker chimes in. Of all people, it had to be Swaggy Baker. If you told me that there was a buck on Twitter a couple hours after Ward's remarks that said, hey, I'm all in on what Ward's saying. I think that holds true for me. We all would have said Swaggy Baker. That's who was going to do it. And sure enough, he did it.
To reset for the folks, what did Ward say? And what part of it did you exactly not like?
Ward said, I didn't come here to be a rotational player, a part-time player. Guys, I dare say there was not a mad scramble for T.J. Ward's services, as far as I know. Now, look, he was a very good player in Denver, where he played with some very good corners in Aqib Talib mm-hmm. and Chris Harris. Top notch. He also has Von Miller creating havoc up front, and that's a big help to any safety in this league. Just like Calais Campbell is helping the Jacksonville secondary, and vice versa. They got a great thing going on in Jacksonville. We'll get to Campbell. I know that, Lee. But, you know.
That's Stevenson thorn in his
side. Lee, I don't like you going public. I don't, because I think it puts Cutter, and you're calling out Mike Smith in public. Cutter's got to defend Mike Smith. You know,
long-time friend, much less colleague.
Yeah. Cutter's not going to throw Mike Smith on the bus, nor should he. Look, if this mini insurrection stops here, no big deal. But the cracks are going to continue if the losses continue, yeah. Lee.
Well, you used the word I used in one of my stories, insurrection. You got an insurrection brewing in the locker room. And I got to ask you, Ira, with all your decades in the NFL, it's one thing for a clown, and that's what he is, a clown, Swaggy Baker, to spout off on his defensive coordinator. Okay, fine, it's Swaggy Baker, you know. Consider the source. But when a guy like T.J. Ward spouts off publicly, this rarely ends good. And I'll use Zampese with the Bengals as an example. When A.J. Green said publicly, you know, everybody thinks he's the utmost professional. When he publicly said, I don't know what the hell we're doing, I rarely remember any time where a respected, longtime veteran of a team, now granted Ward's new to the Bucks, but still, longtime NFL veteran, respected, Pro Bowler, anyone of his stature mouths off publicly with merit. Ward said is not wrong, but it's the method he chose is maybe improper.
Maybe Isbitz feels that at this point a shakeup's needed within the walls of One Buck Place, and maybe Ward is going to trigger something that in the end turns out positive.
When a veteran of the status of T.J. Ward mouths off about a coordinator who is doing a poor job, it's not like Mike Smith's defense is in the top 10. It's pathetic. In your experience, have you ever noticed it to end well?
It's not going to end well if the Buck defense doesn't snap to it, Steve. I looked at the stats.
Look, who's taking notes.
I wrote my Monday column. I put some unbelievable stats about how badly the Buck defense is playing. I believe Buffalo converted 10 of 16 third downs. Steve, that can't happen against a pop gun attack. That you can't even name their receivers. They got a guy who just showed up on Tuesday.
Thank you.
He's the guy that got the wheel route. He had over 100 yards. Steve, that can't happen. You can't face the Buffalo Bills and score 27 points and walk out a loser. Well,
who can't happen. Who was it that said about Thompson? Was his name Deontay Thompson?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Someone said, we didn't know anything about him. That to me is coaching right there. That's lack of preparation.
Well, let me go here on Ward, Ira, because I think there's a few key components to this. First of all, there's no evidence that T.J. Ward has been playing so well that his playing 30-40% of the time is such a travesty. I mean, this guy's been around here for some weeks. He was hurt. He hasn't been playing that great. Got burned in, biting on the fake, whatever. He hasn't exactly been playing great football. And I believe he was beaten this game in Buffalo himself.
Yes.
Early in the game. So, but let's go to Ward, the malcontent, because that's what you're saying he is right now. I'll explain why I completely disagree with you on some level, but he's a malcontent right now. He's only been here 6 weeks. Is this on Jason Light for all his research? And it was all Light bringing in Ward because Cutter wasn't studying T.J. Ward in training camp. And Cutter praised Light at the time of the signing, saying that's 100% Jason. He's been on tracking Ward and, you know, I'm busy and he's all over at his team. So is this on Jason Light for signing a malcontent and sticking him in the locker room where the chemistry everybody thought was pretty good going into the season?
Well, Steve, it's an interesting question, but I think you could expand it. He also signed Swaggy Baker. So the two guys that are malcontents, and I think that's a fair representation of them at this point, are both new to the Bucks, signed this season off other teams. Now look, Ward comes from a winning pedigree. Yeah, has a ring.
As does Clinton McDonald.
But keep your frustrations within the walls of One Buck Place. It does nothing positive, Steve, nothing positive, to air your grievances in public, Lee. And Cutter has tried very hard the last couple of weeks and hinted that if the struggles continue, you could see some cracks in the foundation.
And here we are.
Cutter has alluded to that. And here we are. So I'm not going to blame Jason Light for not knowing in advance that how T.J. Ward was going to be used and that he was going to be very frustrated after six games. I'm not willing to go there, but I will say this. Ward's not playing up to the pedigree that he showed in Denver, and that's my problem with T.J. Ward.
That's true, but in his defense, three plays, 75 yards. And he's like, you mean I'd do worse than that? Point taken by Ward. Number two, is he a malcontent? And the reason why I ask that, on face value, it sure smells like that. But if Ward was a true malcontent, what does he care? He's getting paid. This guy wants on the field. To me, that shows something. It shows, you know, whether it's heart, whether it's ego, whether it's desire. It shows me something.
Fair point.
I'm not suggesting he was in the right. But who was that slob that Dominic had a fetish over? He was a defensive tackle with the Redskins. He ended his career with the Bucks.
Haynesworth.
Dominic finally got Haynesworth. You see Haynesworth whining about not playing? No, he was collecting his cash.
Well, he was playing. That was part of the problem.
That's a fair point by DeKemp.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're the one who says he's a malcontent. I mean, that was basically what you were saying.
On the face of it, don't
air your laundry in public. I would almost, look, as somebody who covers a team and is somebody who asks these questions of players, hey, I can't. I think it's fine if a guy's going to speak his mind. I mean, that's why I'm asking him the question.
Yeah.
That's what fans want to know. So I look at it a little bit differently. At least he was talking about himself and his role on the team. He wasn't like throwing darts all over the place.
And we don't know what he was promised either.
You know, he was pointing at Mike Smith.
He is pointing directly at Mike Smith.
You know, I don't know if that's always so bad necessarily, but he's doing this too early. And Lee talked about how he's got the Pro Bowl pedigree. But in my opinion, he is a malcontent because he hasn't been here long enough to do that.
And not playing well enough.
And he's not playing great.
Unless he was sold a bill of goods.
And he was hurt for two games. I mean, it's...
We don't know what he was promised. He could have been promised what he said. And I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if that was, well, then I would be hacked off too. Like, hey, you're going to play 90, 95% of the time and he's playing 30% of the time. Like, what the hell?
Guys.
It's interesting. It's a problem. It's a problem.
Steve, after 6 games, I think it begs one question that looms above all others. Are the Bucs underperforming on defense, or do they lack the talent? And I think that's a fair question.
They could have overvalued the talent, but let's be real here. You got two guys with Super Bowl rings. You've got another guy who played in a Super Bowl, started in a Super Bowl. You have a fourth who played in an NFC Championship game. You've got talent on every level, Pro Bowlers on every level of that defense, not including Quan Alexander, who sure looked rusty yesterday. You shouldn't be 31st in the NFL in pass defense when you got that kind of pedigree. You shouldn't.
Steve,
you shouldn't.
I'll give you the counter argument.
31st?
They have no edge rusher that's worth his salt at this point, no matter what Mike Smith comes up with. They don't have it. They have a cornerback who's playing with no confidence, a first-round draft pick. The safeties, until Ward picks up his game, are rather ordinary. Those are serious problems, and you don't have enough cornerbacks behind them.
Well, the third counter, if there is such a thing, the counter argument is, you know what? The talent on this defense, it's as good as it was last year. It's as good as it was last year, Ira. Maybe even better. So
maybe Hargraves was playing better last year.
So where do you go? Where do you go there?
To Steve's point, that's directly on the coaches. If you had a promising rookie, 11th or 12th, I always forget.
He played okay.
He was competent for a rookie.
Competent.
He's clearly regressed. Why is that? Either he's a head case or something off the field's bugging him, which is what I think. Or number three, it's a coaching issue.
And Noah Spence was better last year.
He was hurt too.
Ira, let's go here because it really was maybe the most stunning and pivotal thing out of yesterday's game. Hargraves was benched. He didn't start at outside corner. They made an organizational decision to bench this guy.
Did I not suggest that a week ago?
You did. They moved Robert McClain outside, and they made Hargraves a nickel corner. Now, when you play the Bills, who don't throw a lot and who have garbage at receiver.
That's a bench.
And they have garbage at receiver. Putting him at nickel, that's a benching. And he played 53% of the snaps, which is to be expected. And the guy was the number 11 overall pick. He's supposed to be a Pro Bowler on the rise,
or
you know, a guy in that path. So now they've benched him, and after the game, Cutter didn't even say that he'd go back there. He said, well, it depends on the injury scene, presuming to McClain.
Presumably talking about McClain.
Right.
Yeah.
So they've just benched a first-round draft pick, who probably isn't a very good nickel corner either, which that position takes even more experience in a lot of ways to play well, because you're not just straight up covering Manning.
Bench might be a stretch.
How is that a stretch?
He goes from 90% of the snaps 90%
to 50%, and he was supposed to be the guy. Your number one pick's supposed to be a shutdown corner or close to it.
Bench technically means you're on a sideline.
He was drafted basically to replace Grimes when Grimes left.
He's been demoted.
So what do you make of it?
He's been demoted. Well, certainly it has a lot more to do with the way Vernon Hargreaves is playing than their hopes for the way Robert McClain was playing. You know, McClain was a body, and he was the next man up, and they threw him out there. Now his status is uncertain. And you're right, Steve. I don't think you're reading too much into it. Well, if you're saying, is Hargreaves going to go back to outside corner, Lee? And the answer is, well, it depends on Robert McClain's injury. That doesn't say too much for Hargreaves. Yeah, you're right about that, Steve.
And why is he regressing that bad? That's a coaching issue. That's what, you know, the term coaching up, he's not getting coached up.
Ira, you lectured us in the offseason on investiture. So I think you need to weigh in on investiture and how it relates to Hargreaves and what's going on with this team.
Look, I hate to agree with DeKemper at this point, but it's about draft and develop. Draft and develop. What's the New England story? Draft and develop around Brady. These guys get better as they go along.
Same with the Packers,
you know, Pittsburgh, Steelers, Seattle. There's
a reason why those teams win all the time.
Yeah, that's what it is. Draft and develop. Well, the Bucs have made some good draft picks, but some of these guys aren't getting any better. Donovan Smith. I might throw that one out there. Lee?
Is Donovan Smith getting better? Yeah, marginally.
Well,
he's a punching bag for a lot of Bucs fans, but this just reinforces my opinion that PlayStation and Madden has ruined football fans. Everybody thinks it's a video game, plug in and play. There's a offensive line crisis in the NFL. Donovan Smith does well against your top-shelf pass rushers, number one. Number two, he's a road grader. Is he great? No. Is he a Pro Bowler? No. Is he average? Yeah. And if you look around the NFL, you're not going to get rid of an average left tackle who's able to raise his game against stud defensive ends when he never misses a snap. And you know what? If you roll the dice and get rid of Donovan Smith, your chances of getting a worse guy are greatly increased because, once again, there's a offensive line crisis in football. These spread option offenses, these guys takes them too long to learn how to block on an NFL style.
You know, Steve, listening to DeKemper expound so professionally on Donovan Smith reminds me of something. And Buck fans are not going to want to hear this, but you got to speak the truth on this podcast, and that's one of the reasons, gentlemen, that it is a rated podcast nationally.
Yes,
is we don't hold any punches, and I'm going to remind Buck fans about this, Steve. I'm tired of saying this. They've been very lucky with injuries. When you really look, you step back.
Sure.
Winston's the first guy. Hasn't missed a start. By the time he got hurt in Arizona, game over, doesn't matter. Winston plays that game, they lose. Let's be honest, they lose. So let's start there. The offensive line has been completely intact for six games. How many NFL teams could say that? How many?
Well,
yesterday, correct me if I'm wrong, every defensive starter started. Unless you want to argue T.J. Ward or whatever, but they're available. They're healthy. They weren't missing a single guy yesterday, basically on the entire team.
Yeah, Spence played, yeah.
Who does that in week
six? I understand, Ira.
So I just think that makes a bad situation even worse when you look at what's going on all over this league, guys going down. This was a healthy Buck team. They couldn't stop, as you said, Tyrod Taylor and a bunch of receivers who nobody ever heard of.
Yeah.
It's just shocking to me. And by the way, the run blocking wasn't very good. Wasn't very good in Arizona. Wasn't very good yesterday.
It was okay.
You can't pin this all on little Doug Martin.
Baloney. There's running backs out there that don't get blocking, and they make something of it. Come on. I didn't mean to be harsh there, Iowa, but I'm about ready to go on a complete tirade here about Doug Martin. All these freaks on our website and on Twitter that can't wait to get rid of Gerald McCoy. Why is Doug Martin not held to the same freaking standard? He's got more losses as a Bucs player than Gerald McCoy, and he sucks. I'm sorry. 3 out of 5 years, he has sucked, and he's on his way for year number number four. But, oh, Doug Martin, he's a teddy bear. I love Doug Martin. Can I kiss Doug Martin? But Gerald McCoy, who freaking produces and has been on two winning games, they want to run the SOB out of town. You hypocrites.
I love the Kuemper getting up on that pedestal over there, Steve. It's outstanding. I wish there was a video portion of this podcast. Fans would have seen that the Kuemper really, he almost spilled his Geritol over there. McCoy is a very easy target.
Ira, the running game is, it's a very bizarre situation going on because the Bucs are spraying the ball around the field. They lead the NFL in pass attempts.
But they got 25 carries yesterday.
Lead the NFL in pass attempts. They're leading in yardage right there. Four guys had more than five catches. This is not, it should be a softer defenses to run against.
Yes.
That's just simple. Or Cutter can make them soft by spreading wide and running.
No more eight in the box, right?
So that's they're right. Not loading up big time against Doug Martin. I mean, no defensive coordinator is that stupid. And here
do you think he's not taking advantage of good-sized holes, Steve?
I think there's some of that has gone on with him and Jaquizz Rodgers. I think some of it is he just doesn't have the juice that he had as a rookie or 2 years ago. I think that's actually
29, right?
I think it's actually obvious. I think he's 28. He's 28.
And may I ask the same question I've asked for 5 weeks, gentlemen? 5 weeks.
Where is
Peyton Barber? And you know, it's interesting, Ira. Statistically, Rodgers and Martin have the same number of carries this year, right now, as we speak. Same number of carries.
Even with Martin missing the first three games.
Yeah. One of the most bizarre things I can think of, Cutter gives Jaquizz Rodgers the game ball after the Giants game and then buries him. Doesn't play him anymore because Doug Martin's back.
All right, continue they with those same carries.
Same carries. They're 6 yards apart. Same production.
Relatively ineffective. Relatively ineffective.
Yeah, 3.6, 3.7 yards a carry.
How many carries does Peyton Barber have since game one?
One or two.
I got to be fair, Martin, here. I'm gonna say something in his defense.
That's tough for you. Tough.
Yeah, but I got to be fair. I mean, I think the guy's grotesquely overrated, but I got to be fair here. A week or two ago, I can't remember what game I was watching, but Tony Romo, who can't shut up. I like your Twitter, by the way, about Tony Romo. Good analysis, doesn't know when to shut up. Less is more. I'm stealing your line. Less is more. At any rate, Tony Romo said, similar situation to Doug Martin, there's a player that's coming back off injury. He said, I could be in the best shape of my life. And when training camp started, it took me 3 weeks of training camp to get in football shape.
Football shape's different, right?
Yes, very. And a lot of fans, they just think that's a BS excuse. It's not, especially for a running back, who I remember Warwick Dunn a couple years ago on SiriusXM NFL Radio was talking about running backs are one of the few positions, if only position in football, that regularly gets hit from every possible angle. Running backs, every play, they're getting hit from every angle, every part of their body. And Mark Dunn was talking about the physical punishment. So I think Tony Romo, in regards to Doug Martin, there may be something there. Him as a quarterback, it took him 3 weeks to get in football shape. And he's not a running back. So
Steve,
I just thought that was interesting.
There's one thing we haven't addressed, Lee, and tell me if I'm reading too much into it. It was a little pearl. A little pearl that Cutter dropped in, a reference, and a rather serious reference, to a 3-4 alignment. I believe he did. I think it might have been on the Buck
Radio
Network.
He didn't discount it.
Two questions. One, is there enough time left in this season, with no bye week, to implement a 3-4 alignment?
No. They can't do that. They don't have the horses.
Even if they think they have four good linemen, which I think they do.
I disagree with my comrade here. They've already practiced through 3-4. It's not like it's something completely foreign, completely
new. And two,
new.
Lee, are you against the concept of making a radical change like this, considering how the defense
plays? What do they got to lose? Jobs are on the line. What do they got to lose? What do they have to lose? They practiced the 3-4. Shoot, Steve, we watched them with our own eyes
last year.
Doesn't
matter. They haven't played it enough to think that this team, which can't grasp its own defense or tackle. And miscommunications and tackling.
What is Cutter famous for saying? Get the best 11 players on the field. There is no question their best unit is linebackers. No question in my mind. No doubt about it. Noah Spence made his bones as a pass rusher from an outside linebacker position.
As you've said many times, that's 2 years ago. That's ancient history.
2 years ago, but it's like riding
history.
A bike.
It's not like riding
a bike. How's their defense going now? You think it's going to get much worse?
No, but
that's
what I mean. I think they need to start blitzing a lot more. I just don't think that any kind of change of that gravity, that this team has the makeup to handle it. They can't handle it now. and they couldn't handle the communication issues last year.
Is that where a bye week comes into play, or even that wouldn't even help a true bye week?
It doesn't mean they can't run more 3-4, but okay. What you were suggesting is, you know, let's go base, more 3-4 or maybe as a base or a lot more. I don't see it. What they do need to do, in my opinion, is they need to start blitzing a hell of a lot more.
Who? Because who's blitzing?
There you go.
Whoever. You know, Hart, you know,
Levante David in particular.
David, more from the corners. We saw all through training camp, we saw endless nickel blitzes. They don't do that very much anymore.
Ward, maybe?
Well, send Hargraves. He's quick. We know he can run in a straight line. But no, seriously, they need to blitz a lot more. They've gotten away from a lot of that. I don't really get it. I mean, I understand they have no faith in what's behind them, but you've got to generate a pass rush.
Steve has written about
this. And Mike Smith is good friends with Rex Ryan. Okay, I said this on my podcast. The good friends with Rex Ryan. I witnessed it in person in Jacksonville. You know, maybe bring in Rex for a couple of days, a master of sending all out blitzes and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's good friends. Bring him in for 2 days.
Puts a lot of pressure on your cover guys, Steve. A lot of pressure.
What do you got to lose?
What do you got to lose right now, Ira? Maybe you get to a quarterback. Maybe you injure a quarterback. Maybe you generate a turnover. You know, guys make mistakes all the time. Bring in Rex for a couple of days. Let him just go
I'm
over just, film
I'm
with Mike.
I'm playing devil's advocate, Lee, because I'll tell you why. As an old Chiefs fan, going back to the Lenny Dawson days. No, I'm serious.
I know.
I'm watching the game Thursday night, and Oakland's final drive. Chiefs haven't generated a pass rush all night long against Derek Carr. He's sitting back there. Amari Cooper's just running wild. They can't cover him. With the exception of Marcus Peters, and you got to remember, Eric Berry's out for the season.
Yes.
Stud safety. He makes a difference. So they're not going at Peters. They're going at all these other scrubs, and they're killing him, chewing him up. He had over 400 yards passing, Carr, Thursday night. And I'm looking at this Bob Sutton guy who I got to talk to when I went with
his Dodgers pitcher?
Yeah, when I went to his bits, he's the defensive coordinator. And when we went to Orlando for
Don
the Pro Bowl.
Sutton, I'm sorry.
All the Chiefs coaches were there, Steve, right? That day at the Pro Bowl
in
Orlando. So I got to talk to Sutton a little bit. Nice guy. Nice guy's finished lastly.
Yeah.
So now, and I couldn't believe my eyes. The Raiders are on the 5-yard line. They have no pass rush all night long. They're on the 5-yard line. The game's on the line. He rushes 3 and drops 8 men back into the end zone.
Before you...
Carr's got all day. 3 different downs. There's all kinds of flags. And then the last one, he rolls left and hits the guy for the touchdown. What are you doing rushing 3 men when you only got 5 yards to defend?
Are you crazy? I can't go crazy on a defensive coordinator.
And so I'm going to use the same analogy with the Bucs. Steve, I'd rather have a pass rush and a so-so secondary than a stellar secondary and no pass rush. And by the way, the Bucs don't have a stellar secondary.
What edge rush?
So I think Steve's point is right. If you put a little more pressure on Brent Grimes and Chris Conte, so be it. Get the quarterback off their spot, Lee. Make them uncomfortable. And Cam Newton is going to cough the ball up a couple of times.
Am I out of my mind? Didn't Shiano used to send Levante David his best years in the NFL? He would blitz him.
Repeatedly.
Has someone taken those tapes and burned them that they have no current coaches don't have evidence of that? That just boggles my mind.
Those were the days when Levante David was all over the stat sheet after the
game.
By the way,
he's been a warrior. Last 2 weeks he's been a warrior. Absolute warrior. Number two, more to your Chiefs, but it applies to the Bucs as well. You can't get a pass rush, even with 4 guys. Just do what Belichick did. Peyton Manning used to carve him apart, and Belichick, no, I can't get this guy, to hell with it. I'll drop 9 back.
But not when you don't have much room to defend. There's no reason to only rush 3.
Well, I don't think Belichick's secondary was all world when he was battling against Peyton Manning. And Belichick said, hell with it. I'll drop 9 back, and I'll rush 2. And that buffaloed Peyton Manning. Completely threw him off.
Look what this pass rush has done for Jacksonville. Now, granted, Jalen Ramsey is playing as well as any cornerback in this league. I'll say that. Right up front. He's playing at an all-pro level.
Look. Jacksonville's right in my alley. We've talked about this. Listen.
They got 33 sacks. They're on pace for 75.
Ira, Jacksonville is beyond loaded with talent. We don't have that talent. They've got Malik Jackson, Super Bowl hero.
Who's doing nothing, aren't
they? Dante Fowler. He's doing okay.
Fowler had done nothing going into this season.
Right, but he was first-round pick. You know, number 4 overall, something like that?
Yeah.
Who was just getting back healthy, had some other issues off the field. They're loaded with talent. The Bucs aren't loaded like that. They're just not. And Campbell,
Campbell seems to be the difference maker. Seems to be.
Campbell is a monster, an absolute monster, a perennial superstar in this league. They also nominated him for the Walter Payton Award, which, you know, Swaggy Baker's not going to get that anytime soon. I mean, look, the Campbell, Dirk Cutter told us Bucks couldn't afford Campbell. He didn't have $17 million laying around, he said to Roy Cummings.
And they overpaid him.
It was only $15 million, and Bucks couldn't go there, so they paid Swaggy $6 for this year. They paid T.J. Ward $4. We're not that far away. And they paid Doug Martin $5. Would you rather have Calais Campbell?
And how much are they paying Ayers?
Something like $7 or $8.
There you go.
I mean, it's a comedy show on that front. But yeah, you can't compare. Jacksonville's loaded. They're just and they got Yannick, the guy the Bucks didn't draft, second year player off the edge, Yannick Nagaki or whatever his name is. He's got, I think, 7 sacks right now this season. So
and
I mean,
know for a
they're
fact,
loaded.
I know for a fact people in a Bucks organization loved this guy. Obviously, the Jaguars took him, late second round, early third round? And the Bucks didn't have ammunition to get him because Jason Light, he shot his wad on a second round kicker and it blew up in his face.
All right.
Because he didn't have the ammunition, he couldn't go get this Yannick. And Yannick would have been number 2 on the Bucks last year as a rookie with sacks. He'd be leading the Bucks rookie. He's almost as much the whole freaking team this year.
Guys, there's still time. We got to get this out front. There's still time, Steve. I don't believe the Saints are a 10-win team.
Oh, I'm glad you went here. Because let me throw this out to you, Ira. Look, simple premise. Bucks have played well at home. That's the one reason I'm not crazy out of my mind, ready to stick my head in the oven. Because they have yet to have a total crap show at home, which was the hallmark of Lovey's teams and all the other, you know, the coaches before Lovey.
So they're 2-1 at home and didn't play bad against New England.
So they're playing good football at home. Dating back to last year or whatever, as included. So until they crap at home, it's a different animal, a different layer when they do that. But Carolina's reeling, they're beatable, and if the Bucks manage to win their next 2 games, all is fine. You're in great position. You're going to be in second place, and because you're undefeated in the division if you win your next 2. But here's
in the words of Lovie Smith, that's tough duty going into the Superdome. That's tough, dude.
Sure.
We're talking about Mr. Tennessee.
The way that Drew Brees is playing.
But do you agree that if the Bucks split their next 2 games, that the season's completely done? If they go 3-5, they split the next 2, they're alone in last place.
Well, we said that last year, 2-lead. This looks like a different team than the 2016 Bucks. But we had no reason to believe the Bucks were going to go on a 5-game winning streak last year, Lee. We had no reason to believe it.
It's unusual.
Now, there was a bye week, and that helps. You know, that helps with freshen your attitude, restart. You know, and press the replay button. It does help. Steve, you got to beat Carolina because, Lee, if you go into New Orleans having lost 5 out of 6 on a 4-game losing streak, there's no reason to think Drew Brees ain't putting up 50. Am I wrong?
Perhaps, but you know what? Jameis, doesn't he have a winning record in the division?
Well, they went into New Orleans last year in a must-win game. They
I know.
Win.
I understand. And like you say, you and I are – completely different sides of the coin. I say the offense let him down. You said the defense let him down.
I do.
I know Jameis has lost 1 game to the Falcons.
Hey, Winston played great on Sunday. I got no problems with Jameis Winston.
This is one of the things I was going to ask you. There are actually people out there that are comparing him to Byron Leftwich, even though he had the game that he had yesterday.
What do you want this kid?
They expect him to be perfect. I mean, okay, he threw an interception. That's only the second game he's had an interception with. He goes against one of the top defenses in the NFL, racks up damn near 400 yards on the road, 3 touchdowns.
With no running game.
No running game. And gave them a touchdown lead late. That's all you can ask for.
As great a catch and toe tap as Evans did, which was fabulous, that was a tremendous pass.
And oh, by the way,
see?
Ira, a cherry on top here with a bum throwing shoulder.
With a bum throwing shoulder.
Well, I think it's fair to say he doesn't have a bum throwing shoulder.
Well,
I mean, you know.
What degree of bum, I guess you could say. But, I mean, he's not 100%, sure.
He might be. He played a heck of a game. He played a heck.
So where do you think he stands now, Ira, as far as this game for his confidence, for his development? Is this the best you've seen of Jameis? Do you think going forward they figured out the weapons and using them? It was sort of a breakthrough game for Cutter, the play caller.
Play calling was very good. A little coming out party for O.J. Howard. That doesn't hurt Lee going to face Carolina. Look, the Panthers are known for their rugged defense, stout running game. That hasn't held true this season. McCaffrey has been okay. He hasn't been great. He hasn't done much as a running back.
No.
They're going to have to watch him out of the backfield.
Who was it? And one of his teammates said nobody can stop him.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I don't think Keekly played this weekend.
Oh, that's a big thing.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
look, Steve, at 2-4, it's not over. It's not over, Lee, but it's all about how the Bucks react at this point. Now
the
they
defense.
Now they got some character issues going on in the locker room that Cutter's going to have to address, and I think he will. But, Steve, Cutter's play calling was better. It was absolutely better in Buffalo, a lot better than it's been in the weeks preceding it.
You were saying you
and,
didn't.
And their weapons were on display. Their weapons were on display.
You were talking about how you didn't have audio where you were watching the game.
No, it was a muffled audio.
I don't know. Steve.
It
well,
was loud there. People were watching the Steelers game.
Okay.
They're screaming.
Well, there was a couple elements that I heard there. First off, this will answer your question. Why is DeCamper sending me this Twitter about Chucky Sims again? Chris Myers consistently referred to Chucky Sims as not a running back, a receiving back. I thought that was beautiful. Perfect. That was number one. Number two, Moose Johnson was talking about NES Cutter's play calling significantly better. He was much more versatile. But to that point, Moose Johnson would say, you know, hey, and it's sort of like what Phil Sims said with your buddy Chris Russo last week. Hey, Cutter's offense is fun. You have Jameis sit back there and wait and just wing it down the field. But Moose Johnson was saying, you don't have to do that on every play. Thank you. I think it's well established right now. For whatever reason, Jameis and DeSean Jackson cannot connect on a long pass unless there's a penalty. They can't do it for whatever reason. So you know what? Anybody with a piece of a brain, you know, this ain't working. I'm not going to go back to the well again. And they were talking about that. Get DeSean Jackson shorter passes in space and let his wheels take over.
Some very good misdirection yesterday by Cutter on the play calling. Excellent misdirection. Got Howard wide open. Nobody near him. On that left side,
now,
that's good play calling.
Mike Tannier, Bleacher Report, he comes from the Football Outsiders crowd. Not that I'm a big stat geek, but I respect those guys because they don't just crunch numbers and say this is absolute. They're like, whoa, that doesn't look right. And Mike put out in his column today, and this was touched upon on the broadcast yesterday too, when it's 3rd and 6 or 3rd and 7, you can lay money at a Vegas casino and get good odds that Cam Brate's going to be targeted. And I think, I can't remember what play it was that I think everybody and their brother, I think it was a touchdown to OG Howard. Everybody and their brother was like, here comes Jameis throwing the seam route to Brate in the end zone, and instead they throw it to Howard. There you go.
Could you make a credible argument? Cam Brate's been their best player. Could you? I'll say it again.
You know what?
You're on the Brent Grimes bandwagon.
No, they're 2-4. They just got motored by these football garbage defense. This is sickening. I don't care who their best player is right now. I don't even care. So don't even ask me that.
You sound like a man who has no fear the Bucks are going to turn this around.
I picked the Bucks last week. I've picked the Bucks every single week
and
on our
Kemper
podcast.
And I picked the Bills.
You guys picked the Bills. And yet again, they should have won the damn game.
Yep.
And they choked it away. I don't know. I'm just expressing my frustration. Erica said, whatever. You know, whatever. Who cares? Best Bucks so far. They stinking up the joint.
Not everybody's stinking up the joint, Steve. The offense
No. The offense, that's why I asked you, was this a breakthrough day for Jameis the play call, for Cutter the play caller, and the growth of the Bucs offense? Because right now, they're moving the ball, basically.
It's all on Mike Smith right now, Lee.
Absolutely.
You know, they say football's the ultimate team game, and it's complex. It's on Mike Smith's shoulders.
All right, Ira, under all circumstances, we'll ask this. I'm going to hit you with some rapid-fire stuff. First, let me show you this fantastic photo on Ed Moore's Cadillac, Brandon.com.
Yeah, a picture of Rachel Watson.
He said Rachel Watson.
I got a one-track mind.
And Ed Moore's Cadillac, Tampa.com. Ira, all the great offers end at the end of the month. You need you over there.
If you had Rachel Watson behind the behind the steering wheel of a Cadillac, the Kemper would be in at Ed Moore's tomorrow.
You could have
news for you.
You could have just stopped after when you said, if you had Rachel Watson, stop.
Stop. All right. All right, what's your rapid fire, my friend? What do you
rapid,
got?
Rapid fire. My rapid fire. Okay, Ira, Mike Smith, under any circumstances, do you see him not making it through the season?
No. I don't think you replaced the guy on December 10th, Lee. Why? Because he showed last year that he can make some adjustments. Now he's got to do it again. Last year was miscommunication. Easier to fix
than
guys not playing tackling. Below their – not tackling, not in the
Which
right.
goes back to coaching.
You know, he's under the gun right now.
If
Mike Smith's under the gun. He's got Cutter's confidence. Cutter's not going to throw him under the bus. But at some point, Mike Smith will have the rest of the season to salvage his job, at which point, if he doesn't, the word will come from the top, Mike Smith's got to go. And if I'm Dirk Cutter and I get the word Mike Smith's got to go, Mike Smith goes.
You don't think Cutter would put his foot down and say Mike Smith goes,
absolutely
I go?
Absolutely not.
You don't think so?
Absolutely not. Cutter's waited two, and Mike Smith would understand that. Of all people, Mike Smith would understand Cutter's got to do what the bosses tell him to do, or he's out of a job. Cutter's waited too long for his shot. He comes back for year three, and now Cutter's under the gun in year three.
Well, right. Is he? Because Steve made a good point to me this morning in the email. The way the offense is starting to hum, and the way he's developed Jameis, and I'm sorry, haters, he's developed Jameis, do you want to get rid of him?
I said he comes back for year three.
Yeah. He just said he comes back.
Yeah.
Now, here, I got a question real quick, a follow-up for you, Ira. First question. I don't know this to be fact, but I think it's accurate. The Glazers have never fired a coach. They themselves have never fired a coach in season, correct?
I believe that's right.
No coordinator, no head coach. However, that doesn't mean a coordinator hasn't been fired. Does Jason Light pull a power move here?
Keep going.
And if he does, what is Dirk Cutter's reaction?
What's your power move?
Bye, Mike.
In season?
In season. It's not unprecedented.
I don't think Light would do it, Steve. I don't think Light's in a position of power to do that, Steve, right now, because Light's job's on the fence as we speak at 2-4. They go south. They finish 6-10, 7-9.
Well, yeah, Ira, you already said, hey, Mike Smith makes it through the
Mike
end
Smith
of the season.
Mike Smith makes it through the year,
Yeah, you know, the Bucks. They got rid of Jagodzinski. They got rid of Jim Bates. They got rid of Tedford. Didn't let him come back. There's some presidents there.
None of those guys had the pedigree of Mike Smith.
None of them are Mike Smith, and none of them actually had a full year with the team yet. Different scenario. All right, Ira, Dirk Cutter. If the Bucks offense continues to thrive, no matter what the final record, is he back next year?
I don't think the Glazers want to make a habit of firing coaches after 2 years, especially after the first year is a 9-7 season. I don't think that would be fair, Lee. I don't think that would be fair to Dirk Cutter.
So good offense. Team goes 7-9. Maybe they right the ship a little and through the rest of the season.
I think he gets an out card if the offense is good. Lee, going forward, and Jameis Winston is good going forward, I think that's Cutter's out, Lee.
You know, there's all kinds of sticky situations here because if you scratch the surface, it's not as clear-cut as Mike Smith, you suck, you go, or Dirk, it's all under your responsibility, you go, or Jason, you go. There's all kinds of
variables. Variables, yeah.
I was looking for something else like fingers involved here. Mike Smith just re-upped that contract with the Glazers at the end of last year, a handsome contract.
Glazers have proven they'll eat contracts.
Are the Glazers going to eat that? That's number one.
I don't think they care about the money.
Number two is Cutter's loyalty, and he's nothing if not loyal. I mean, Mike Smith helped him get a job, get his break in the NFL. Dirk is a very, very, very loyal man, so that plays into it. And Jason, I could sit here all afternoon and argue for Jason, but if they're looking for a scapegoat, this guy doesn't have a contract. So there's all kinds. It's not cut and dry that everybody's safe or everybody's gone. It's drama.
It's a very dynamic situation here, Steve.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's cut and dried is that if the Bucks struggle the rest of the season, finish 6-10, 7-9, if they struggle, something has to change. I don't think the Glazers will say, let's do it again.
Status quo.
Let's ride.
Yeah, we just had an off season.
This isn't Tony Dungy making the playoffs twice and then going 8-8. This is a different ball game, and I think they would see the need for a change to shake things up, a little bit. So somebody
and expectations would play into that. We all know what the thinking was during training camp. Lee, this was a 10-win team.
Sure. The fans, I see there's growing unrest about Jason Light with fans. General manager's position, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. What is the stats you always cite, Steve, from Bill Polian, that a first-round draft pick's borderline 50-50
yes.
bust rate, and it obviously declines from there. And, I mean, this is a position you're going to make mistakes. And Jason's hit a lot of home runs. He's made some mistakes, no question about it, but he's hit a lot of home runs, the Grand Slam being the biggest one, Mike Evans being the biggest one. I mean, you can make arguments all day long that he's doing a good job. But again, that he doesn't have that contract for next year. That's not good.
Steve, we said the legitimate excuse for a 6-10 season, we said this
injury.
In the summer, would be an injury to Jameis. Yeah. All bets are off. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, look, Light has had historic failures and historic home runs, very much feast or famine GM, and it goes back to the arrow. I mean, if Vernon Hargraves is a bust, if we can drop the B label on him after 2 years And Noah Spence, sorry, if you can't stay on the field, you're a bust. Might not be your fault, but you're still a bust. That's not good. And we've said this before. You have to go to the owner's office and say, hi, I need a fifth year to build a pass rush. That's no good.
Hey, Ira, I want you to comment about the halcyon days of the Bucs.
Halcyon, excellent word.
When Gaines Adams would get 6 sacks a year.
Yeah, you know, who would have thought we'd be pining for little Gaines Adams?
All good times.
A little more rapid fire, Ira. Get back to that. In that game, end of the game, we're splitting hairs here, but still, you've talked about this on a different plane before. End of the game, Bucks had the ball, 30-yard line, 10 seconds left, they're down by 3, 2 seconds left, whatever it was. Why do they not throw the ball deep? If you get a pass interference, even if the Hail Mary...
You get another play.
Even if the Hail Mary is only to the 30 of Buffalo, if you get the pass interference, you've got Murray to kick a game-time field goal. Instead, they throw short and play high school ball, flipping the ball around.
That never works.
Go backwards.
It doesn't work in the NFL. That play never works.
Why do they not throw the Hail Mary and maybe you get a flag?
You know, I can't argue with that.
What the hell is that?
You know, you toss it up to Mike Evans, maybe they interfere with him. You know, that's what you're looking for, a flag. You're not looking for a catch, Lee. If the catch is made, you're out of timeouts. Game over.
Yeah, look, any coach in the league says if you're on the 50, right, you throw the Hail Mary and maybe you get a flag or you catch the ball. It's the same concept when you only need 3 points to score. Maybe you get the flag.
Again, you got a 2% success rate.
Not
but,
even.
But it's maybe better than what happened.
Better than what they did. So I don't know. To me, that was disgraceful. I just imagine Team Glazer watching 43 seconds of Ring Around the Rosie to close out the debacle.
I don't even want to think about that visual.
You know, you got, Donovan Smith with the ball on the 20-yard line running full speed ahead. Come on.
The only thing missing was Swaggy Baker trying to make a guy miss over
with
there.
His belly shirt.
Unbelievable. All right, Ira, O.J. Howard, you know, we saw him as a weapon, finally. Breakthrough, matchup nightmare, all that stuff against a good defense. Is this a new thing going forward? Do you think
I think it gives defenses a whole other thing to worry about.
Forget about defense. Do you think Cutter goes to him now and says, you know what, now we've got a new element to our offense?
Yeah, but I don't think that takes away anything from Cameron Brate. Again, I don't want to make this the Cameron Brate Society. He did not play well against New England, gentlemen, although he made a fantastic touchdown catch in that game. He did not play well. And he's the first guy to say it in the locker room because I was the first guy to come up to him, and he was the first guy I went to. And he couldn't even pick his head up. He was just staring at the floor saying, I blew it. I didn't show up for my team. That's great. A guy you'd love to have on your team. So I don't think Howard's, going to make Cameron Brate slink into the backgrounds. But now you got some weapons. Now, Lee pointed out one thing, Steve. We haven't really talked about it today, but he still can't connect deep with DeSean Jackson. He still can't do it. It's a problem, Steve. It's a problem because it'll give the defenses one more thing to worry about. And so far, that connection hasn't happened.
It's a problem if you keep going back to the well and expecting that dry
well
to have
water.
Well,
I'm not going to be a hypocrite, Steve. I've been saying throw 4 or 5 long balls a game.
I can see that. I mean, 4 or 5, the way the defense is playing, they can't waste 4 or 5 plays. But I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree that once, twice, once a half, wing the ball downfield. Maybe you get a flag. You force
comes to worst. It's not even close enough that you're going to get a flag, Steve. The passes aren't close enough.
Well, if we want to play positive Peter here, at least they did connect on the one there. And the holding call, it doesn't take away from the chemistry that may have been built on that one play or taken a little step. So maybe that's something. It doesn't count, but it's still a legit, covered
by
play.
By the way,
but
Lee,
it's messy. It's messy.
Lee, we got to mention this. With all the weapons, and now they're starting to take advantage of all the weapons, and the play calling's better, you would think the complementary running game would emerge, and we're not seeing it. We're not seeing it.
We talked about this before.
We're not seeing it.
We've talked about
this all
summer.
They got weapons all over the field. The defenses aren't sitting there worried about the Bucs running game.
Can't you run for a buck 20? Can't you?
A lot of running backs, yes, they can.
No, I mean, as a whole.
Well, I said this a little earlier with DeSean Jackson. And there are fans out there that come hell or high water. They want the Bucs to run freaking 40 times. If you're running up against a brick wall and losing half yard, so what? Just run the ball. That's caca. The Bucs defense, the way it's playing, they can't afford to waste plays. And if the running game's not going, and there's ample evidence that it's not going, you got to go with the guys who are producing. You can't go with the guys, pin all your hopes on Doug Martin to get 6 yards a carry.
Well, my point is fix the running game. Fix it.
Well, the way to fix it's the offseason.
How are you going to fix it? I mean, we know the offensive line can pass block. People can pick out every other game Donovan Smith drops a clunker and Jameis gets whacked. We get that. That happens. But they've allowed, I think, 10 or 11 sacks, which is among the lowest in the league. I mean, there's time. That's why Jameis is completing a bigger percentage.
Who's not getting the job done in the run blocking?
Well, here's one for you.
Can't you grade these offensive linemen?
It's a mix. It's everything together, including Cutter, including what he's calling, including these guys being overrated as run blockers. They're still rotating, even split Evan Smith and Pamphile. What is that?
Yeah.
What is that?
Doug Martin last year had the worst yards per carry. Now, I stated earlier in this podcast how there's an epidemic in the NFL with bad offensive lines. If Martin was the worst in the NFL, and there are a whole lot worse offensive lines than the Bucs, yet their running backs were getting better at production. So I'm really tired of the knee-jerk excuse, oh, they're not getting run blocking. There's worse teams.
I got an answer.
Worse teams getting production.
Give Barber some carries.
Yeah, I would start Peyton Barber in this game. Why not? If you want to try to set a tone.
Could Barber get 10 or 12 carries?
Every time he's given more than 3 carries, he's done a decent job.
Yep.
I reflect to the Kansas City game last year. Comes off the bench, got some nice yards, running behind, guess who? Donovan Smith.
It's worth a shot. It's worth a shot. You're not going to hurt anybody. Give them a couple of series, see what happens, if they can establish a tone. They did that last year against Carolina and had some success with it. But the running game's a mystery. Still a mystery. You know, maybe we'll get some answers or we'll see it flush out a little bit. But I don't think it's any more mysterious than they don't have a dynamic running back.
Well, I think you make a very good point in that with all these weapons and now they're established and Winston's getting the job done, nobody's coming in here saying we got to stop the Buck running game.
No.
And so that makes it even more frustrating.
Yep.
That they can't get that ground game going.
And it also says if they're not worried about the ground game, it also speaks to the level of talent they have at wide receiver, that teams know they're going to throw the ball and still they can't stop them.
All right, Ira, the Buffalo thing. Anything you want to say to Buck fans? Because you know what a punch in the gut that game was, kicking the balls, whatever you want to call it. There have been a lot of those this year. All three road games had that element to it.
How about a little shout-out to little Patrick Murray over there? It's been throw him a bone. Throw Murray a bone.
A 50-yarder? How about that, huh? Just illuminates some of the other issues of the Bucks.
Wow. It's not over, Lee. It's not over. They're 2-4. They're in the basement, of which they have grown accustomed to your face, except for last year, since 2011. This is brutal.
The bastion of positivity here, Ira.
It's not over. Steve, it's not over.
No, I don't think it's over either, but you have to win the next two games. If it is, you're done. If you don't, you're done.
But it's getting late in the game. Lee, yeah. It's getting late in the game. I know we're not even at midseason yet, but it's late because you don't want to have to climb over three teams. It's not going to happen in your own division.
Steve's written about it already. I mean, this was lined up for the Bucs to make one hell of a playoff run this year.
You know.
Atlanta's choking.
This is not killer row going Arizona and Buffalo. I'm sorry. That's not a killer.
No, it's not. It shouldn't have been.
They just can't crap the bed at home. You win. Win your home
game. I got
games.
A question for Ira here.
I want to see a little defense against Carolina Sunday. I'm sorry.
I think we all do. Gerald McCoy haters are out of control right now. What is it that fans don't get about McCoy? I mean, I talk to NFL offensive coordinators and they look at me like I got three eyes when I tell them there's a large fan base with Bucks fans that just they think the guy is overpaid Akeem Spence. And these offensive coordinators, they look at me like I'm a Martian. They're like, what the hell are you talking about?
I'm not so sure it's his play as much as some of the other things about McCoy. For instance, in the locker room yesterday, you know, he's not throwing things around, you know.
He's
not
going
being
to do that.
Surly.
He's not one sap.
They look at Hard Knocks and they see the Superman, the man. Mm-hmm. That all registers with Buck fan.
But
Buck fan's looking for a place to, vent his or her frustrations.
Well,
right,
he's not going to change.
And he's the anti-sap, you know. But we've pointed out on this show, Leroy Selman helped more guys up off the ground than McCoy ever will in his career.
McCoy's an easy
target.
And
the guy's in the Hall of Fame.
Just an easy target when you're losing?
You know,
is this?
You can win with Gerald McCoy if you surround him with better players.
To Steve's point, is this an evidence that we've become such a stat geek society? And I reference BS stat in baseball called WAR.
Oh, I don't like that WAR.
Ridiculous. Thank you. If WAR meant anything, that means Andre Dawson was a garbage player. because he played on losing teams. That would mean Bobby Grech was a lousy player. The Angels struggled for so many years.
That's ridiculous.
That would say Carl Yastrzemski was a lousy outfielder because the Red Sox lost through most of the 60s. I could go on. Stan Musial in the 50s and 60s, the Cardinals were horrible. By that standard, is this people using baseball war with football? Well, the Bucks lose, so that means he's a terrible player.
Of all the players on the Bucks to scrutinize, Gerald McCoy's not in the top half. Not even in the top three quarters.
I just wish people would hold Doug Martin to the same standard.
He's not having his best season, but he's having a good season.
Oh, he's having a good season, all right.
He's having a good season. Those people, they're never going to change, Steve, the anti-McCoy people.
Well, you know what? We'll leave it at that, Ira. We've hit that before. The war, for people wondering, it's wins against replacement. It sort of means that
the average player, and you put them up
against your team,
that player.
If your team loses, it counts against you. Because
your team loses.
And if you're not, it's just a big mess. You can look it up. Hit up Google. Hit up the Sage.
It's not a baseball reference or something, you know, and it's stupid.
iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, the Sage.
What is not stupid is this podcast, Mr. Isbitz. And we will continue to hold the Buck feet to their fire until they turn this mess around.
All right, Aaron, get out.